Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Back to pass, play action. Allen has to throw it out in the right flat to Shakir. He's at the 50. Gets away from a tackler. 45-40. 35-30. And rumbles his way down to the 27-yard line. There's the yards after catch.
Chris Brown on the call there. Khalil Shakir, definitely one of the main ascending members of this Bills team. 45 targets last year. He's already at 56 receptions this year. One of the best yak guys in the NFL. One of the best catching percentages in the NFL. I have been on him since Boise State. Josh, I know you were a big fan of his as well. And another big fan of his, joining us now on the West Her Hotline, Aaron Quinn of Cover One. Aaron, my man, good morning. How are we doing today?
Good morning. It's a little chilly here, but doing all right other than that. How you guys doing?
I mean, the weather thing, too. I have been living in bliss with it never getting under 40, like, during the day recently.
Crazy.
Like, it's been beautiful. I'm like, yes, keep this going. I know global warming's a thing, but, like, selfishly keep this going. And now, finally, winter is coming, and I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah, it's been a nice short-term benefit to us up here. And golfers, I know there's a lot of golfers over there at WGR. The season has been extended longer than I thought possible, so not too many complaints.
Personally, I'm very happy that it's starting to get colder. I'm a big winter guy. You sleep better, you feel better, you can wear the big puffy clothes, the vests, the flannels. It's just, it's my type of season. I cannot wait.
I can't do the snow. I can't do it. Driving in the snow
whatever,
and everything.
Fine. We can agree to disagree.
But Aaron, we're bringing you on here because the Bills are on the bye week, and man, like they have. To me personally, we were talking a lot about it yesterday too. Have exceeded what I thought my expectations were going to be this year. I always think the Bills can win the Super Bowl with Josh Allen, but they talked about it being a year in transition, and yet here we are at the bye week, half game out of the one seed, 9-2. What have your takeaways been so far?
A couple of things, really. I think if you line it up also with sort of the media perception of the Jets and Miami Dolphins this summer, I think we kind of go about these things in the wrong way and how we define what we think success will be or strength of schedule or predictions early on before football is even played. I am also probably, I'd have to say, if I look back at my predictions, the Bills have impressed me. They've probably exceeded where I thought they would be. But I didn't think the drop-off was going to be as significant. There's a lot of names and recognizable names, and I think there's a lot of emotion attached to those names. But just because national media guys don't know the names coming up, right? Like, nobody was talking about Christian Benford. There was a little bit of rumblings. You mentioned Khalil Shakir. Guys weren't talking about some of the things that we, as people that cover the team all the time, knew was kind of in the back burner and why the Bills felt okay releasing and letting go of some of the names, the aging names. And that is what good teams do. And we should have seen this coming when you have a QB like a Josh Allen. We saw it with the Kansas City Chiefs just a year ago. That was also supposed to be a retooling, rebuilding year, and they ended up winning the Super Bowl. When you have a good foundation, you have a good culture, you have good front office, coach, and you got the quarterback, a lot of that stuff, it erases a lot of the perception of, all right, we can move on from a Jordan Poyer and we're going to be okay. It doesn't matter as much as it used to.
And I do want to get to Shakir, but as you just brought up there, talking about some of the defensive guys that left as well, this Bills defense, I mean, kudos to Bobby Babich and McDermott, but yeah, I mean, you're seeing Dorian Williams taking a step forward. You've mentioned Christian Benford. The safeties, we've taken a lot of calls here, both on this show and across the station about, you know, come the trade deadline, add safeties or do that. But Damar Hamlin, Taylor Rapp, I thought have been very, very good back there. And then you're getting a lot from Greg Rousseau, who, you know, the sack number's not up there, but the pressure rates, it looks like, have been up there, the QB hits, what have you. They have just built a system, a culture, an organization that just can elevate these young guys when the time is for them to get into the starting lineup.
Yeah, and actually, John Butler was on with Tim Graham after he was no longer employed with the Bills. And one of the things that stood out to me that he did talk about that was a positive was really knowing the defense and finding the guys that are just going to fit, whether it's culture or just schematically, right? And I think Damar Hamlin is a great example of that. He's taken a lot of heat this year. I get accused on Twitter because I defend that it's not as bad as it feels. Are there probably five or six plays he wants back that are big ones and stand out? And I'm sure the post-game show gets calls of people yelling at him? Yes, definitely. But he's better, I think, than people assume, and he's a fit. He went to Pitt, which basically is a farm system for this Sean McDermott defense, so he had years invested in learning this type of defense. And so as he comes into year four, he's already ahead of the game and being a system fit and knowing where he's supposed to be. Is he the most athletic guy? No. Is he making the biggest splash plays in the league? No. But he's pretty much always where he's supposed to be. There's a couple run fit issues, but that's everywhere around the league. And so he's one example. Christian Benford is another one. No one was talking about him in the draft process. And Butler kind of talked about guys like him and Dane Jackson specifically as there's a certain type of DNA you need to play in this defense, and the Bills are really honed in on what kind of guys they need, and you're seeing that kind of play out. And it's depth guys like a Casey Tuhill, another kind of under-the-radar signing, and every time he's in, he's making, again, not big splash plays, but he's doing exactly what he's supposed to. But then you have it on the high end, too. I think somebody that's not getting enough credit, and there was a lot of off-the-field issues with him last year and then obviously facing the suspension this year, but coming off an injury, the big contract, a lot of kind of negative vibes going towards Von Miller, and he's actually playing really well, and I think he's going to be big down the stretch as well. And so they're getting it out of the guys that are the high ends, your Greg Rousseau, your higher draft picks, but also it's the depth and knowing what you need in those positions. Another guy, Ed Oliver, you know, had an injury earlier this year, but over the last 3 weeks, seeing him build more and more and being that disruptive presence, they just find right fits, and they're able to let guys go. We saw it a couple years ago, Tremaine Edmonds, another player who we defended a lot as he's a really good player, and we were worried about his departure. But then Terrell Bernard steps in and makes you not even worry that you lost a good player. And so they continue to just draft and develop. And that's a really, you know, there's a lot of flaws with Sean McDermott that people want to talk about. But being able to, with him and Bean in lockstep, drafting and developing, look at what's going on with the Jets right now. They've drafted well on the high end, top end, but their depth's not there. When injuries happen, it's not there. The culture's not there. They've done a great job of doing it, and I think you see it on the field with the defense.
Another guy in the defense that I've loved so far this season is Terrell Bernard. Obviously, he hasn't played every game here yet, but, you know, it just it feels like he's out there and can completely control that defense. And there's one highlight from the Bills Chiefs game this past weekend where, you know, you see him tap at Oliver to get over and cover that QB sneak or potential for a QB sneak. And that the awareness there is just insane for me. I mean, his season so far has been fantastic.
He's been fantastic. Eric Turner, I got to give a shout out to him. He saw this coming from a mile away of just what type of player he is. He's always got that iPad in his hands when he's seeing with pictures. Like, this guy's a student of the game. And here's the thing. The separation of talent across the NFL, it's not huge, right? Like, there's talent on every roster. So it's the extra stuff. It's the small stuff. and Bernard's doing it. You heard Sean McDermott talk about it this week. It's just all the attention to detail, the preparation. And he had that on one of the touchdowns. It was a slant in the red zone. You can see him signaling to Taron Johnson. I love Taron Johnson. I'm not trying to get on him, but Taron, it was a miscommunication. You could see the passion. Like, Bernard saw the play coming. He knew what it was going to be. He communicated it right, and somebody didn't pick that up, and it resulted in a touchdown. But that's happening. I watch defensive all 22 every single week, and he is the guy. You're right. He almost sees every play coming before it's there, and that's just attention to the details, to the preparation, and it speaks volumes of, again, the type of DNA guys there. Again, nobody was on Terrell Bernard when he was drafted, and people were kind of like, you know, what are you doing? You have Tremaine Edmonds. You have Matt Milano. We need offensive linemen. Why are you drafting this guy? Same with Dorian Williams. You know, he's not at the level Bernard is, but people were like, you just drafted Terrell Bernard. What are you doing? They have a vision for what they want this roster to be, and it's paying dividends.
Yeah, I remember doing those draft shows, Aaron, and both those picks came in, and you're like, okay. And the positive side, what you were thinking is like, maybe one of them will be the Tremaine Edmonds replacement. I mean, that was how you took it, and now looking at both of them, they've got two incredibly good young linebackers on this football team, and maybe getting Matt Milano back here relatively soon. Exciting there for the linebacking core. On the offense, though, Aaron, Khalil Shakir, I thought, him and Kincaid, I was very, very excited for most of the offseason. I like the addition of Curtis Samuel. I kind of understood the vision of Everyone Eats. But for me, in the summer, in August, I thought it was going to be, that'll be fine because Shakir and Kincaid are going to be kind of their number ones, their dual number ones. They haven't gotten Kincaid going. We'll talk about him here in a second. But Shakir, I feel like he's a top 20 wide receiver in football, not just slot receiver. He just feels like he does everything well.
Yeah, I've loved it, what he has shown since before last year when he really came on. You saw it coming. You saw the trend going in the right way. It took a while to replace that production that Cole Beasley left this offense with, right? That security blanket role in the slot, which is so important to Josh Allen in this offense. It took a little bit of time to figure that out, and Shakir has, like, blown that ceiling wide open. That's no disrespect to Cole Beasley, really one of the better slots of the last decade, but what Shakir offers is so much more. He can do those things. He can find the soft spots and zones. He's an intelligent player. He's so reliable at the catch point. But he's shifty, obviously. People see the yards after catch ability, which is something everyone has wanted in this Bills offense for years. Make it a little easier on Josh. We don't need explosives to all come from air yards. You need to be able to get guys the ball, make them miss guys in space. But the most important thing in his development this year, I think, is Brady in his development. One of my biggest issues with Dorsey was not being able to manufacture touches for your playmakers in space and get them the ball. We didn't really see that, right? It was within the flow of the offense and option routes and Josh having to make those reads and find guys. There was a game a couple weeks ago where they went at Shakir like five times in a row on these little screens and dump off plays. And he just made plays happen. And getting your playmakers the ball in space is huge. And I think that's been the real leap in Shakir kind of getting on the national stage is Brady's ability to say, hey, if he's not getting the ball in within the structure of the offense, he's such a playmaker. We got to find those ways to get him the ball. And he's dialing some of that other stuff up for, we saw some of these like swing passes that go to Cook, but it's really like a lead swing pass. They haven't really hit. KC really wrapped them up really good this week. Those are going to break at some point. You're seeing more and more of that. And I even think Kincaid is getting some of those looks. Unfortunately, Josh Allen is kind of missing him on some of those ones, which make the Kincaid stats feel a little worse than they probably ought to look. But hats off to Brady for being able to dial up specific looks for specific players to try to get them the ball.
Yeah, and on Kincaid, you just mentioned it there, too. I mean, we were talking last week. Joe Marino, I think, jumped in as well. For me, I definitely phrased it poorly on Twitter because I try to write it out in the proper character limit. But for me, I don't think it's him. But yeah, is there a chemistry issue with him and Allen? Because then, I mean, you see against the Chiefs game, I know Allen's not the greatest deep ball passer, but he puts a rainbow ball on Amari Cooper, where with Kincaid, it just hasn't really gotten going yet. They don't really seem to want to use the tight ends a ton, which is fair. That's fine. But for him being a first-round pick, maybe selfishly for me, I did sort of expect a lot more. Not what Brock Bowers is doing or even to be Travis Kelce. But, I mean, Sam Laporta last year, not really this year. They're finally getting him going. But, walk me through it a little bit here.
The way I'm viewing it is, one, I think a lot of defensive coordinators saw the vision that we as Bills fans saw going in the year, right? Like, this guy's a weapon. We have to keep attention on him. That takes away some of what the Bills probably want to do, but that opens things up for other people. I think that the threat, whether or not he's productive or not, the threat of that production exists when teams are game planning. Some of it's just luck. Mm-hmm. Right, some of those shots it's not on Josh, it's not on Dahl. I mean, it is on Josh if he misses, but those are not high efficiency plays. The one that he got hurt on, that's a deep shot.
Yeah.
Those don't hit at a high efficiency. We had that kind of conversation with Josh early in his career. I think they're going to come. I think you still go to them, you still work at those. There's been moments of production. We saw even this weekend some of the, like, a screen to Knox. I think if Kincaid gets that, there's probably 5-6 extra yards on top of that. And so it's going to come. And for me, as soon as a guy's in the building, I remove the draft pick. I know it's hard for people to do. Mm-hmm. There is an expectation that comes with the draft pick. But for me, it becomes, okay, now I've got about a 3-year development window. Can this guy hit those kind of expectations within a 3-year development window? You're seeing it with Greg Rousseau, right? Like, he didn't hit that window right away. There was some concerns that, hey, is this going to be another one of Brandon Bean's bust? Ed Oliver was the same way. We do see guys come into the league right away and have immediate success and hit that draft, expectation. But more often than not, those are the anomalies, and the averages are still a development of a 2-3 year window. And I know Sean McDermott's talked about that before, that, you know, we got to take the pressure off some of these guys and allow them to develop as players. I see development in Kincaid's game. There's still more meat on the bone for him. I'm excited about the future, and I think as he gets back here healthy, when you get a stable of, now we're seeing Curtis Samuel healthy, defenses are having to target in on Khalil Shakir more. Keon Coleman's development has been really good. It stinks to see him get hurt. But if you can get, I don't know if we'll get all these guys healthy back at the same time, it's going to open up a lot of things for a lot of players, and I think Kincaid will eat because of that development of everyone else.
So you brought up Curtis Samuel a little bit there, and he by far had his best game as a Bill this past week against Kansas City. Do you think it's been injury? Do you think it's been trying to get involved in the offense? Like, what is there more to come with him, you think, or where are we going there?
I don't know if there is more to come, but I was definitely an advocate of kind of pumping the brakes on the frustration with him early in the season. He was suffering a turf toe injury this summer, right? And that's one of those injuries that's so annoying because it sounds like it's nothing, right? Turf toe is such a bad name for it, for actually how tough that can be for an athlete to overcome that injury and play through it. He was overcoming that, and then he got the pec injury on top of that. And so, again, Sean McDermott kind of talked about that. He's been very resilient in playing through injury to get here, and as other guys got injured, he was kind of forced into a spot. I know there was a lot of frustration of, like, hey, Brady didn't get him going. I think they tried. He just wasn't fully healthy, wasn't fully ready. And again, as other guys are stepping up and making plays, if he's your fifth receiver option, like, defensive coordinators can only throw so much attention at so many guys, and if the Bills get healthy, you've really got to pick your poison. And that's where I don't think on a consistent week-to-week basis, Curtis Samuel is going to be a big-time player, but there's going to be certain matchups where teams are bracketing Kincaid or they're trying to stop the screen game with Shakir. And, like, one of the plays Greg and I keep talking about is that screen. You've seen teams kind of step up into it and swat some of them away. I'm waiting for Brady to set up that screen and have Samuel just, like, leak out the edge come down the seam. And I think that's where he's going to expose some plays. He still has explosive playmaking speed. And so, again, I don't think it'll be a week-to-week thing where we see a lot of success from him. But as wide receiver 5, what an option to have.
Yeah, it's weird now looking back just a month or so ago. I know Nate Geary tweeted out as well. Like, the wide receiver position is now, like, one of strength, where not that long ago it was a real concern. You're getting Curtis Samuel healthy. The Keon Coleman development as well, Aaron, you quickly mentioned that his development's been really good to see. It is a shame he got hurt. Yeah. I was not the biggest Keon Coleman fan coming out of Florida State. I was much more of an Adonai Mitchell guy. Like, that's who I had zeroed in on for the Bills. But sure, I have been so impressed by Coleman as the weeks have gone on. Really, for me, his best game, maybe not stats-wise, the Seattle game. I thought he was a true, honest-to-God difference maker in that game.
Yeah, and again, I think it's culture fit, right? Like, mm-hmm. so many people, I know your guys' station was blowing up over the Worthy stuff, right? And
oh, I know.
Even one series into that Chiefs game is like, oh, God, look at what he can do. But I watched back that film, and Worthy's not there. He's not ready. His development's still not quite there. I mean, the Bills eliminated Kelce from that game, and they eliminated a lot of the weapons, and they didn't go at Worthy, and I think that's because they don't trust in him entirely. And Keon Coleman's just a fit. And another guy who's not getting enough credit, we just talked about these receivers, Mac Hollins. People were really hard on Mac Hollins to start the year, and I think it was because he was thrust into a role that isn't really a fit, and once you got Amari Cooper, he could kind of settle back into the role that is. I know, again, Twitter's not real life, but a lot of people have seen Valdez-Scantling doing well in New Orleans, and to me that's more a product of, hey, there's not a lot of depth there. There's injuries there. It's an opportunity thing. Again, I think the margins are slim in talent, so good on him for doing that. Mac Hollins is such a better all-around wide receiver and what he's able to bring to the Bills and the small details and things. So this is a well-rounded room, lots of different weapons, lots of different options. And again, it's buy-in from all these guys in development and getting the right culture fits. And I think that's what you're seeing starting to kind of take shape here as we get towards the end of the season.
So, Aaron, with the Bills on a bye week this week, what is your plan with viewing the NFL? Are you going to take it a little bit off, or are you going to look around at some of the bigger name teams in the AFC? What's the bye week have in store for you?
Bye week for me is honestly just sit back and enjoy football. I love every ounce of it. Right now, the way I'm looking at for the Bills specifically is they just got to handle their own business. The games that I've seen them lose, like the Ravens definitely gave it to them a little bit, but I feel like the Bills really lost that game more. And same with the Texans game, the Bills really beat themselves in that game. And so get healthy for the Bills, and I think that they can beat anybody. I'm not worried about, you know, other teams and what they're doing as much as sitting back and enjoying the NFL. And the Bills are in such good position that, yeah, there's probably a couple games that I'm going to cheer for certain outcomes so that maybe the Bills can clinch up the division a little bit sooner. But they've done everything they've needed to do to this point at the bye, where my only concern for the Bills is, hey, who are the guys that are going to get healthy here and come back for San Francisco and Detroit and in the LA game here over the next month? Other than that, I'm just sitting back and enjoying football.
Aaron, man, thank you so much for jumping on with us today. What do you guys got cooking over at Cover One?
Yeah, all kinds of stuff. Make sure you're following on YouTube, throughout social media. We got all the guys are working really hard to bring content for Greg and I this week. We were having Aaron Schatz, I know a friend of the station here, mm-hmm. on to talk about DVOA, one of my favorite stats, and how that impacts the Bills and what to look for and the predictive nature of that. And then Greg and I are going to kind of run through some of the remaining schedule and how playoff scenarios could shake out and seeding and stuff like that, which is so much better than years past in the drought of being around Thanksgiving time and starting to look at mock drafts. It's way cooler to sit and look at playoff scenarios versus mock drafts. So we're excited for that.
It really is. Growing up with the Bills drought, this was mock draft season. And I mean, that's kind of why I became a draft junkie. But yeah, I mean, even today, looking at the Bills could be playing the Broncos and envisioning that matchup, way, way more fun. Aaron, man, thanks so much. Enjoy the bye week. We'll talk again soon.
All right. Appreciate you guys. Thanks.
That was Aaron Quinn on the Wester Hotline over at Cover One. Again, great follows, all of them. A lot of good film study, breaking everything down. I know I go to them a lot to get a better picture. We did it with Kincaid today. I mean, I was someone that was very much down on him, and Aaron kind of, you know, set me straight a little bit on all that stuff. But we've also both been big Khalil Shakir fans, really, since he came out of Boise State. I will say the one thing I did not get right on him is I thought he'd be like a baby Deebo Samuel. They used him in the run game enough to where I was like, now wait a second, that could be really, really fun and interesting. And it never ended up materializing yet. It has not materialized yet. I think it could still work. And as Aaron mentioned there too, the screen game and what they've got going there, there's going to be a game or two with both him, Kincaid, Samuel, that it could break. And I'm really liking where the Bills offense is at. My only issue, and they didn't really have it last week, but it has been an issue this season, has been the slow starts. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing I'm worried about. But if they got that, maybe that full complement of wide receivers, or at least close, which they could hopefully be getting here in the next few weeks, that might be changing here coming up.
It's funny because, like, we brought up Shakir and stuff like that, and we were talking before the segment started, and obviously you and Derek are like the leading voices for the Shakir Hive and everything like that. Mm-hmm. I was I don't know. It's funny. I'm always like the third forgotten member because I was quietly cheering on from home because you guys were here doing the draft coverage, and I'm just like, this is great.
Well, I was sitting where Evan is sitting now too, yeah. And they picked him, and my arms went up because like I think the month or so before the draft, I'd like kind of like dove into his film, and I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, I like him.
Yeah,
like this is good.
You were the reason why I got on board with it. It's just I always think it's funny that it's like you and Derek leading the charge, and I'm just here as like a quiet cheerleader.
Like hey, yeah. Woo. 803-0550 is the number to call. Going to take a quick timeout when we come back. Sal Capaccio joins the show as he gets ready to take his much-deserved little break here with the Bills on the bye. We'll get his thoughts on the Bills being 9-2, half game out of the AFC, and plenty more in the NFL after a quick timeout. You're listening to WGR.
Joe Douglas's contract was up after this season. I don't know that he wanted to stay there anyway, but the Jets made it simple on him today. And obviously, Woody Johnson fired him this morning, just as he fired Robert Saleh on a Tuesday morning last month. And so the Jets are starting from the ground up again.
There's Adam Schefter there on yesterday's firing of Joe Douglas. Happened about a half hour after we got off air. Not too surprising, as Schefter even pointed out there, like last year's contract. I also saw reports too. It's like he's been miserable. Why not do it now? They're going on the bye week. It is so fun though that this went as bad as it could for the Jets. Mm-hmm. I mean, like if you had to, what's the worst case scenario?
When Aaron Rodgers,
like realistic
Aaron
worst case scenario,
first step into the building. Okay, what's the worst thing that could happen? It's this.
It is that by year two, everyone is fired. They're not even going to win six games.
How are you feeling if you're like Sauce Gardner or Garrett Wilson?
Oh, this sucks. This
like,
is awful.
Because like if you're Sauce Gardner and Garrett Wilson, like you're so young in your NFL careers. And all of this turmoil just followed you for your whole time in the NFL.
Well, I mean, you kind of knew. You got drafted by the Jets. You had an uphill battle.
That's fair.
You did. But, I mean, just it's gone as bad as it could for the Jets. Mm. They've won one game since firing Robert Saleh.
Yeah. I mean, anti-head coach bump.
Oh, man. Yeah, not great. I think their defensive stats have also gone just down.
Everything has, on both sides of the ball, it's all gone down.
Bad vibes. Joining us now on the, I guess, kind of Wester hotline, but not really. He's sitting right next to me.
Sitting in front of us.
It's the Duntire studio. It's in the Duntire studio, actually.
So how are we doing today?
Pretty good, guys. How are you? What did something happen with Sauce Gardner?
The Jets. We listened to Adam Schefter kind of give the obituary to Joe Douglas and was like, they go kind of new, but why not now?
Yeah, you know, he gets a lot of credit for drafting well, and I'm not going to take away some of the really nice draft picks he's had. They've had a lot of draft capital with some of the trades they made early on, and they were drafting high. It's also, it's more of a hit rate to draft high. You don't have to all the time. But I just think that they've just managed themselves into a really, really, you know, terrible position, obviously. And it looks like they're in for a hard reset that could take a little while.
It's going to take a little while, too. And I know this has become a conversation the last like few, I didn't even say just the last few days. It's a bad quarterback draft class, too. So, I mean, you've got an older quarterback that seemingly has bad vibes all around your team that already didn't have great vibes. And I mean, if you're not getting Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward, even then...
There's no way Deion Sanders lets Shedeur Sanders go.
No, like, I don't think so.
He would see the Jets and just absolutely not.
Did either of you see that yesterday, Michael Urban on the Herd talking about that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I did. And I have a couple things to say about that. First of all, anybody thinks that Shedeur Sanders isn't like... I saw a lot of like, wow, who's going to draft him that high? Oh, he's actually legit prospect,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, for sure.
But here's the thing. Like, so what Michael Urban said was, so people to catch up, Michael Urban said... He has very good sources, meaning obviously Deion, right?
Totally, I mean, Deion.
Yeah, he's very close to him. That said, that if that Shedeur Sanders, Deion's son, got drafted by the Cowboys, Deion would take that job because people have tied Deion to the Cowboys job because he's a former Cowboy, and it's Jerry Jones and glitz and glamour, and he's doing well in Colorado. But here's the part about this I don't get: Are you telling me that the Cowboys would literally wait until after the draft to hire a head coach? Because how do you know they're going to draft him? What you can't do that. You can't hire a head coach in May.
You would have to have the first overall pick
and know who you're taking.
You can do it. Yeah.
Exactly. You can't do it.
No.
So that doesn't wash with me. Like, he would have to take the job in January, and then they'd have to do whatever they can to move heck and high water to get Shedeur Sanders. Or they'd have to just think, let's hope we get him. Or they say, yeah, we'll wait. We'll hire you after. But then what's the point? Because then there's nobody else left to hire anyway. Yeah. Because everybody else is gone.
Yeah. And if there's so much chatter around like Deion actually pushing for his son to get drafted by certain teams, is that actually going to scare teams off? Or are they just going to be like, no, you're lying. That's not true. Like,
I do think that there's an element of, we've seen this with some people over the years. What's the gentleman in basketball with his kids that came up and he was always on?
Oh, the Ball family.
The Ball family, yeah.
Lonzo Ball, right? Yep. We saw this kind of thing. I'm not comparing Deion to Lonzo Ball. My point is we've seen parents get so involved where teams are like, I don't know if I want to deal with that at that level. And here's a football guy, he's a football coach, and he's going to draw a lot of attention. Like, I think about, I have no idea if the Bills would consider, like, obviously they don't need a quarterback, right? So let's just say it wouldn't be the Bills, but I think about a team like the Bills, like that's a kind of team that wouldn't want that necessarily hanging around their building and every day and all the talk and the distraction. Like, it's just everything they're not about.
Like a team that has that type of culture that just isn't, it's not this drama fest essentially. Because that's kind of what all this is.
That's exactly what you bring with it, right? The same thing with, like, Deion said something like, I'll make sure Travis Hunter goes to the right spot. How are you going to make sure of that? Like,
I'm so into this, what this draft season could be. And it helps, too, that Colorado's been good this year.
Yeah, for sure.
A very real chance.
And Travis Hunter's amazing.
I think now he is the Heisman favorite.
Do you guys think he's going to pick one position? Or do you think he's going to try to do the duo position thing?
I've been so up to him on that.
Yeah. That's fair. You're right.
It does not matter what he wants to do.
That's true.
Once he gets to the NFL, they'll say, you're either a wide receiver or a DB, or we'll let you do both. That it's not up to him.
I just wonder if a team's going to let him do both.
I'll be very surprised if any team lets him do both. I think you want to get the most out of one.
I think a team would put him in spot duty on something or other.
Okay.
We've seen that before. Yeah. It happened, right? But in the NFL, you really have to train at, you know, one spot kind of. So it'd be interesting. But anyway, just going back to all that, I just don't think I think it's really interesting when Michael said that, and I'm thinking, well, how are you supposed to wait till the draft and then hire a coach? It doesn't work.
It doesn't work. And even then, the marriage between Jerry and Deion would be the I mean, as an outside person, I'm here for it. That's a reality TV show.
Jerry loves Deion. They love each other. But I would say, I even think Jerry Jones wouldn't want Deion Sanders because Jerry's the face of the organization. You hire Deion, he's immediately the face of the organization.
Yeah. I mean, Jerry gives interviews after every single game.
Yeah.
Deion's also going to give interviews. With that being said, though, Deion in the cowboy hat with all the cowboy
it would really fit.
TV would love that.
Yeah.
But Sal, the Bills 9-2 going into the bye.
Yep.
We were talking expectations yesterday. I thought they could win a Super Bowl in a transition year. Teams have done it. Kansas City's done it.
Yeah.
But it is kind of surprising that, like, this year of all these years, this is sort of their best start. Not sort of. It is their best start in the Josh Allen era. It's best start.
Best 11 games in 32 years. Right. It's incredible. And I just think it's so wild to me how so many people thought in August. June, July, August, going into the season, that this team was resetting, rebuilding. And here they are with this type of record. Like, you have to give so much credit to this organization for being able to navigate that. It's not all about Josh Allen. He's playing great. I mean, he's not having an unbelievable record-breaking year. It's all about what they're doing as a team overall. Yes, of course, you don't have Josh Allen. This doesn't happen. But I just think the organization deserves a lot of credit. I think that they knew that it would be a transition year. They said that. And even probably in their own building, they'd wonder, what does it look like? But we're confident. I remember in training camp, players like Deion Dawkins saying, like, yeah, everybody kind of thinks that we're kind of taking this step back. We're going to surprise a lot of people. They don't realize how good we're going to be. And even I had my doubts, but thought they'll still compete. They'll be fine. Like, at this point, I figured if you can get to 7-4, that'd be a nice record. Like, that's a good record after 11 games for this team, and maybe you're competing for a division. To be 9-2 is just, it blows my mind that this team could be 9-2 after everything we've seen. And you look at the roster, too. I think we could make an argument that it's not the most talented roster they've had in the Sean McDermott, Brandon Bean era.
I'd agree with that, yeah.
But they're playing really, really, really good football, and they're playing together, and it speaks to the culture they built. Speaks to identifying talent, the young talent that can come up and fill in. That's a big part of it, too. They're getting guys who are ready to step into roles who didn't have to before, and now they are, and they're ready for that.
I think it's kind of interesting, too, because the whole everybody eats mantra at the beginning of the season, it's not that it hasn't been there, but it's only been there in, like, certain weeks. Like, you haven't seen one main guy step through as, like, the main target or whatever, but you also have seen, for a two-week period, Keon Coleman's going off for these two games or this game or whatever. And then, look, it's Mac Hollins actually, like, stepping up, and here he is. And it's like, I thought Everybody Eats was going to be, you know, every game you have all of these different players doing so many different things.
Sure.
But in reality, it's been this week it's your turn, this week it's your turn. And it's just, it's worked. And it's a
good point. And I think that that's based on if a defense comes into a game and goes, well, listen, we need to shut down Khalil Shakir. Well, now suddenly maybe Keon Coleman has a breakout game, right? Boy, we need to shut down, you know, now Amari Cooper. Well, here's Dalton Kincaid. And of course, you know, he was injured last week. So I do think that that happens. Look, we all know Stephon Diggs is a great player, right? This is not to diminish that whatsoever. But I think everything we just talked about with the culture and building and like how you, what we just talked about with Deion and mm-hmm. all that, when you have a presence like Stephon Diggs in your building and every day, it weighs on you, I think, as an organization to make sure that like that guy's getting his, right? It doesn't have to be him saying, I have to or I'm going to be a bad teammate. I'm not saying that. But I do think you think about it all the time. Like, we got this guy. We got to feed him. That's why he's here. We're paying him a lot of money. And I just think it really kind of freed up. Not having him, they're not as talented. There's no doubt. They're not as talented at wide receiver this year. But it's freed them up to be able to utilize everybody and not worry about who's getting the ball. And everybody does pull for everybody, and everybody eats in that sense. So it does work. Yeah, it's amazing, I think, how this transformation has kind of taken place when you look at the offense and all of that. And look, not having Dalton Kincaid last game, not having Dalton Kincaid and Keon Coleman and still able to move the ball the way they did, and it wasn't always great. It was a struggle at times, but to be able to score 30 points all these weeks that they have is pretty remarkable. I think it's amazing that here we are, and yet they still have reinforcements coming. They're getting healthy.
That's how I
look at it. Right? It's incredible to think that they can get maybe to an even better level, another level after what they're doing based on these guys coming. And the team has played the long game, guys. They have said, like, maybe, I don't know this, but let's just say Dalton Kincaid was close. Let's just say Keon Coleman was close. Spencer Brown. What did they say? No, we don't need to do that. We're okay here. These guys can play, and you give them an extra week, and that's what's kind of been it's the reward that keeps giving.
And it also shows like the confidence they have in their backups, in those guys like Ryan Vandermark. I mean, he stepped into his first NFL start and was shut down Chris Jones.
And I think he didn't shut down Chris Jones. Osiris Torrance did because he's on the inside.
That's true.
Right? But he played really well. But you're right. I mean, on the right tackle, I guess you're right. When he's playing
that side.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. I'm sorry. But no, you're right. Because I want to make sure Osiris Torrance gets his props. He had a great game. It wasn't a one-on-one thing with Ryan Vandermark. Your point is right, though, about Ryan Vandermark. And this is what I like to say. How many people? There's a lot of Bills fans out there who could not tell you how or when they acquired Ryan Vandermark. There's people thinking, oh, they must say it was in UDFA this year. Nope. He's been in the organization for 3 years now. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, they must have signed him after the draft. Nope. He was actually UDFA by the Indianapolis Colts. They waived him. The Bills then plucked him to their practice squad. This is what I mean. They identify this talent and say, this is a guy we think in a couple of years can be good for us. Let's develop him. Let's work him. And when you have a GM and a head coach on the same wavelength, I'll give you one that I think doesn't get talked about enough. Like, what a great move it was to trade for Brandon Codrington.
Oh, yeah. I love him so much.
Right?
He's been such a fun piece on this special team.
But I mean, like, think about how shaky the return game was in the preseason and all that.
Yeah.
It is completely stabilized. Like, there's no question. When this guy's getting the ball, A, you're thinking, oh, yeah, we're okay. Mm-hmm. You know, granted, he may have had the fumble. He's not going to make a mistake. He's going to make good decisions. Oh, by the way, he might take one to the house.
Yeah, they haven't had that since Andre Roberts.
Exactly right. And he's a rookie. He's young.
You could maybe have him just as a piece for the next few
now,
years.
I mean, you talked about the Jets earlier. I get the Jets have Gibson's their returner. He's really good.
Yeah.
But when they traded for Codrington, and I watched him the first couple of times I watched him, I thought, boy, the Jets might regret trading this kid in their division. Mm-hmm. Like, he's going to be really good.
It's a lot of fun.
Things like that matter.
Yeah, exactly. And we've talked about, like, the organization needs to get more credit than often they're given. I mean, McDermott, maybe especially, is always lambasted. You've brought up, too, the fourth down point. Out of nowhere, he's too conservative on fourth down. You're sitting there going like,
it's just
him and Dan Campbell and everybody else.
Yesterday, there was that tweet that Ben Baldwin had, Computer Cowboy, I think it was from him, if I remember right. And I quote tweeted it and said, boy, I'm surprised even how aggressive he's been.
Yeah.
He's been very aggressive. And anybody who says that he hasn't, it's just what you say when you don't like the guy or because he coaches defense. It's just what you say. It's just wrong, right? But yet, sure enough, someone had a reply to me that said, well, he's really aggressive against the weaker teams, but not against, or but not against the better teams. Like, what information are you gathering
from? Where's this
coming from?
That
is not true. He's been aggressive. Now, look, it doesn't mean he's perfect. He's not infallible. We know that. He had a bad challenge the other day, right? At the end of the Houston game, they screwed that up. But you want to put that on Sean? He's the head coach, of course. Him and Joe Brady. That has happened. We know what's happened in the past for sure. Every coach has these moments. Every coach has times where they screw up or, you know, don't play the clock right or challenges. But this coach here, for what he's done with this team, to be able to build, to be able to develop, and then now you put that with the piece of being more aggressive in those moments, in those situations, people want to see in the playoffs. But I just think he deserves credit for it.
I'm seeing this chart for the first time, and wow.
It's incredible.
I didn't realize it was that big of a difference.
Him and Dan Campbell, everybody else.
Yeah. And it's also interesting to see the Chiefs all the way back at the end. Like, that's... Wow.
Now, someone said, yeah, but if you look at that chart, someone said, but what you really want is to be high up on the right side, like the top right, because that shows you're really aggressive in all situations. I said, that's a good point if you say what you want. You don't have to necessarily want it. To me, that chart's showing he's been smart aggressive.
Yes.
Like, you know what I mean? It's not reckless aggressive. It's smart aggressive.
Did you hear him on with Shopin the Bulldog?
I did. It was amazing.
He gave a long answer on all the fourth downs.
Yes, it was great.
It was
credit to Mike for asking him to walk through the process. Yes,
and it was great. I will say this, and Sal, you're around him much more, but from the outside in, it does feel like this year him and the team a little more relaxed. It has felt like the last few years they've been wound up tight, and this year, I mean, McDermott's making jokes with the media. I hear constantly, even in the post game, he's making jokes with Mike and Chris, and I'm like, maybe there is this feeling of. Okay, it didn't happen in the first era, if you will, with Stephon Diggs, Josh Allen, and that group. But we like this group, and maybe there is a little bit of pressure off them.
Sure, I do. I think so. I think there's something to be said for that, and they can play a little more free. So, and Josh, you know, it's so funny. He still is kind of maintaining. Remember last year it was like the low, 2 years ago, whatever it was, low positive. It was just like, it never seemed like he was ever happy.
It's the worst verbiage
now,
ever,
today,
always.
I mean, now you watch him this week, last week, in these games. He's shown a lot of emotion in the game. Mm-hmm. But after the game, he's very calm, collected, talks about, hey, it's one game at a time, 1 week at a time. I think he's much more mature at that level as well. But he's not just being low positive because he's emotional in games. Right? But I do think that there's a bigger picture at play here that we're trying to accomplish, and they're not going to be satisfied till they get that.
All right, Sal, we do got to hit a break, but before we do that, what do you got planned for the bye week here?
I am heading out today. We are traveling out and... flying out to San Francisco tomorrow morning.
I want you to know I'm immensely jealous.
I've known about this trip for a few weeks. I texted Pat Hammer. Really a lot of rain happening this weekend, unfortunately, in that area. Today, like, they're calling like a bomb cyclone or something, a weather event. I'm like, what is this?
What?
I'm going
what
out there. I know, right? Something like that. A lot of weather. Anyway, we're not going to let that deter us because hopefully the weather dries up a little bit. But Alcatraz Friday night.
There you go.
Night tour. Sabres Sharks on Saturday in San Jose. That's going to be fun. If you're out, we're going to try. I'll be putting stuff on my social media at Sal Sports. Going to try meet up with some Bills backers after the Sharks Sabres game, because it's actually going to end at like 8 o'clock their time. So we'll have some time. So in San Jose, if you're in San Jose, San Francisco area, I'm trying to hook up with some of the backers there. We're going to go someplace. I'll tell everybody where it's going to be. We'll do that. Then hitting up Napa on Sunday and tasting some wine.
Beautiful, man. Have a great time.
Thanks, guys. We'll be back next week, and you guys do a great job, and I appreciate you always every day here 10 to 12. I know that this time slot's important for people, and obviously I know you'll be filling in on Monday while I'm gone, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, man. You got to take a quick time out here. Still, of course, always taking your calls, 803-0550, the number to call. Sabres Live also coming up at the top of the hour. This is WGR. Quick final segment here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, which, of course, is always brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Josh, Sabres play tonight. Sabres after dark.
I have a theory of how I can stay up and watch this game.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to get home at like 12:30. I'm going to go right to sleep, right? I'm going to go sleep until 10:30 tonight, and I'm going to stay up, watch the Sabres game, and just stay up till work.
That actually might work for
you. I think it would work.
You are going to hate yourself.
No, because the game would end at 1. I'd have like 3 hours, 3.5 hours till I'd have to leave for work. I could just, you know, read a book, play some video games. Maybe even take a nap.
Fall asleep again.
Just take a nap for 3.5 hours. I think I'm going to do it.
Sabres at Kings tonight, 10:30 puck drop, 9:30 pregame right here on WGR. And for more on the Sabres, stay tuned. Sabres Live coming up next after a quick timeout. This is WGR.